see you all here. If you are here for the first time, I'd like to extend just a special welcome to you. We're glad that you're here. We hope you find Unity Church to be a place which helps you to find and to keep your balance, a place which nourishes you and inspires you to lead a loving life of integrity, service, and joy. Following the service, we hope you'll join us for refreshments in the parish hall. There you can, well, talk to everyone who's here. And you can visit the bookstall and stop by the one or two information tables that are set up in the parish hall. The libraries are also open if you'd like to stay and check out a book. If you're interested in learning more about becoming a member, if you've been visiting and you'd like to know more about becoming a member, please visit the welcome table in the parish hall, or you can ask me questions. Next Sunday, please join Rob, Jan, Teresa, and I for our tolling of the bells service, where we recognize those who have died in the previous year. During the service, the congregation will wish Jan and Rob good tidings and blessings on their sabbatical, and welcome Teresa and me as the sabbatical ministers. Services next Sunday are at 9, 11, and 4:30. After each service next Sunday as well, the congregation will give Rob and Jan a wonderful send-off in the parish hall, and you are all invited to come to that. Next Sunday, religious education classes will resume. And if you have an interest in teaching in the religious education program, Carrie Meyer, our wonderful director of religious education, is looking for maybe half a dozen adults to help in that program. So she'll be available after the service. If you're interested, please talk with her. Also, if you have a guest at your table box, bring that next Sunday, as we'll be gathering those to support the Unitarian Universalists Service Committee's efforts. Finally, at the conclusion of the service, Elizabeth and I would like to greet you at the Portland Avenue doors, and once again, welcome to Unity Church.
This is a season of abundance, a time for celebration. The stories have regaled us with mangers and miracles, stars and sleighs, an armada of gifts and garlands, the long-awaited birth, and every heart filled with the gladdest of tidings. The songs have serenaded us with chestnuts and angels, bells and bobtails, comfort and joy, and always laughing all the way. But if that were all there were to this season, we would not have come here today. We would have remained at home basking in contentment. In the backs of our minds, in the corners of our hearts, we know the truth. This is also a season of loss, a time for grief. Some camels arrive bearing expectation and disappointment. Sometimes we cannot find the angel who is supposed to perch on top of the tree. And sometimes the manger smells like a manger. Knowing this, we gather here today, our stockings stuffed with mistakes and memories, recollections and regrets, because we also know that inside the stories and the songs, there is yet one more truth. This is a season of compassion, a time for healing. Come, let us worship together.
Join me in our responsive reading, number 536. 536. Every morning, the world is created. And fasten themselves to the high branches, and the ponds appear like black cloth on which are painted islands of summer lilies. And if your spirit carries within it the thorn that is heavier than lead, if it's all you can do to keep on trudging, each pond with its blazing lilies is a prayer heard and answered lavishly every morning. Thank you. Together we recognize the cycle of life and death, the circle of love, compassion, and witness that permeates this sacred place. One of the ways we do this is by lifting up the names of people who we would like to bring into the sacred embrace of this gathered community. Our hearts this evening are with all those who live with grief or chronic pain, for illnesses seen and unseen, those who live with addiction, and those who care for family members in ill health, and those who knowingly face their final days with dignity and courage. We want you to know that the church is at your side. We especially hold in our prayers this evening Barbara Anderson, who is recovering from wrist surgery, and Priscilla Morton, whose mother died just last week. We hold in our prayers this evening Betsy Guthman, whose sister Jody Hyman died this last week as well. As we stand in compassionate solidarity with our neighbors all around the world who suffer in the midst of habitual violence, may they and we be instruments of a lasting peace. I invite you now to share the names of those people you would like to celebrate, memorialize, or hold in the embrace of this community. For the names which have been spoken and the names which remain in the silent sanctuary of our hearts, may we be forever grateful for the lives that have touched ours. And let us pray together. Eternal source of love and life, we pause this evening in the doorway between the new and the old year. Looking back, we remember laughter and surprises, time spent with loved ones, hands that held our hands, cards and phone calls that let us know we were cared for. Looking back, we recognize our limited perspectives, our fallibility, and we see that we are still so very human. Looking back, we give thanks for the sunrises and sunsets that have marked the days that have brought us to this point in this congregation on this day. Looking back, we remember all that has been, and for a moment, we are still. O Holy One, we are still here. We are still here and we are filled with the spirit of life, alive and on fire for compassion. Alive and on fire with passion for each day that is ours to live. Alive and on fire to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly in the new year. Amen. Thank you. this offering be a blessing and a gift to those who need it most.
Our first reading by Denise Levertov is entitled, Talking to Grief. Ah, grief, I should not treat you like a homeless dog who comes to the back door for a crust, for a meatless bone. I should trust you. I should coax you into the house and give you your own corner, a worn mat to lie on, your own water dish. You think I don't know you've been living under my porch. You long for your real place to be ready before winter comes. You need your name, your collar and tag. You need the right to warn off intruders, to consider my house your own, and me your own person, and yourself my own dog. And from the book of Matthew, when the Magi had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. Get up, he said. Take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child and kill him. So Joseph got up, took the child and his mother during the night and left for Egypt, where he stayed until after the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, out of Egypt I called my son. Now when Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and in its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning. Rachel is weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more.
And our third reading this evening is from the poet Naomi Shihab Nye, Kindness. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment, like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go. So you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for." And then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. Well, the presents are opened, the eggnog is finished, and the trees, the real ones anyway, if they're still standing, are shedding their pine needles. You know what this means. It means there are only 350-some shopping days left until next Christmas. You better get busy. But let's wait just a second before we barrel into the new year. Let's pause for at least a moment. This is a peculiar Sunday, this Sunday that rests between the old year and the new. It is a doorway of sorts, a threshold between the years, a time when we, like the Roman god Janus, the namesake of January, with his two faces, one looking forward and one looking behind, we might pause like see where we have been and where we would like to go. And to add to the complexity of this threshold time, the Christian calendar on this particular Sunday invites us to consider the story, the slaughter of the innocents, and to look at how this story might inform our lives in the new year. Although Matthew's gospel is the only gospel that includes this story, it is worth recalling, because the story stands in such stark contrast to how we think of Christmas. The angels singing on high, the star over baby Jesus in the manger, in the creche, with the world full of hope and light and possibility. In Matthew's telling of the story, King Herod, threatened by the birth of Jesus and what this Prince of Peace might mean to his rule, issues a violent decree to protect his throne and his power. Kill all the newborn babies in Bethlehem under the age of 2, he says. Kill them. And we do know that King Herod was a real king. He existed. What we don't know is if this decree was actually carried out. We know Herod was cruel and ruled with an iron fist, but it's unclear whether or not the children were slaughtered. In some ways, it's besides the point, because this story, even if it's not literally true, it speaks to a reality of what it means to be human, what it means to have something you love taken away and destroyed for it to be no more. To be clear, I need to highlight Rachel. In the aftermath of King Herod's decree, this decree to kill these children, Matthew informs us that a voice was heard in Ramah, that Rachel wept for her children, refusing to be comforted because they were no more. And what I want to lift up is that Rachel in this passage is not a specific mother who has lost her child or her children, but rather that she is the metaphorical mother of Israel. And she is symbolically weeping for the innocent children of Bethlehem, refusing to be comforted. Matthew is no dummy, and he knows that Rachel is a powerful symbol that his contemporary listeners will recognize. This same powerful symbol was used 600 years earlier by the prophet Jeremiah, when he also portrayed Rachel as the mother of Israel, weeping for those Jews who had been killed and those who had been taken into Babylonian captivity as the northern kingdom of Israel collapsed. I realize there's a possibility that this image of Rachel and her tears is too foreign to us. And so I offer this image. If you imagine our own Lady Liberty weeping and refusing to be comforted because the hopes and dreams of this country no longer seemed possible, then we might have a sense of what this image of Rachel means. As we know in the story, Jesus survives Herod's decree. He escapes with his family into Egypt. But what of those other children? What of Rachel weeping? And this is a part of the Christmas story that we just tend to gloss right over, as if it had very little to say to us. But this is not a lifeless 2,000-year-old story about someone else and their tears in a land far away. This is a story about us. And while it's certainly a story about evil and the Herods that are in the world today and And it's certainly about the things we do to stay in power and the extreme measures we'll go to resist any sort of change. I want to focus on Rachel. And I invite you to identify with Rachel and her tears, not necessarily because you've lost a child, although that may be, but so that her grief, her story, can speak to you. If we open ourselves to this story, it asks, in this past year, what futures have dissolved in a moment, like salt in a weakened broth? What have you held in your hand, have you counted and carefully saved, that is now gone and will not go into the new year with you? What dreams of yours have faded or been shelved so high for so long that you can barely reach them or even remember that they're there? And if this sort of grief was not a visitor to you this past year, you need only imagine those families that gathered this holiday season, feeling the ache of a missing loved one, a service man or woman who is not coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan. You need only imagine the wailing, grieving men and women of Iraq and Afghanistan weeping for their dead children and loved ones. You need only imagine the groaning of Mother Earth and her rapidly changing climate. At least it's finally snowing. I moved here from Tulsa and people said, Minnesota, it's cold. This is a weak winter so far. So if you imagine the groaning of Mother Earth and her changing climate, her melting ice caps, and her tears as she struggles under the weight of our collective consumption and giant footprint. And you need only think of Guantanamo Bay and what this means to our idea of civil liberties. So this is not the moment to just move quickly from Merry Christmas to Happy New Year. It might be easier to prepare a place in our hearts for the birth of hope in the Christmas season, but we should also prepare a place for our grief and despair, for the death of some innocence in us or in the world. As the poet May Sarton reminds us, do not rebel against what pulls you down, the private burden each of us can name. Which brings me back to Matthew's gospel. There it says, Rachel wept and mourned and refused to be comforted. What do we make of this? Did Rachel turn away all those who came offering sympathy? Did she push away the breads and soups that friends and neighbors surely brought? I struggled with this passage, wondering why she refused to be comforted, refused to be led out of her despair, until I remembered that line by May Sarton, the poet, do not rebel against what pulls you down. And it dawned on me that Rachel, as a symbolic representative of those grieving mothers and families, surely she must have accepted the food and love and care of her friends and neighbors. But she refused to let anyone talk her out of her grief. She tuned out the empty cliches and platitudes that people I know would have offered, explaining why this had happened, what was going on. She tuned out those explanations that were primarily meant to make other people feel comfortable, to ease their pain, not her pain. So I imagine Rachel sitting with her grief, speaking to her grief, letting it course through her body, feeling every dimension of it, knowing and trusting that God abided and grieved with her. But she refused to act comforted or to avoid her pain so that other people would feel better. She did not rebel against what pulled her down. If, like Rachel, you open up to the grief in your life, you might, as the poet says, speak to sorrow until your voice catches that thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. As you see that loss and grief are not unique to you, that they are, in fact, the fabric of life, and that your tears join other tears that flow into a common ocean. Now, I realize that some of you here in this congregation this evening might be at a point where you're saying, enough. Enough talk of grief and sorrow. Can't you tell a joke or just say something funny? And to those people, I promise you my next sermon will be a rolling good time. But for this sermon and this day, I want to stick with the grief, not to create a huge pity party that we wallow in, but because when we are attentive to our grief, it can serve as a catalyst in our lives. How can it serve as a catalyst? Listen to these words from the poet David White. Those who will not slip beneath the still surface of the well of grief, turning downward through its black water to the place we cannot breathe, will never know the source from which we drink. They will never know the secret water, cold and clear, nor find in the darkness glimmering the small round coins thrown away by those who wished for something else. Naomi Shihab Nye acknowledges in her poem Kindness that before you can know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. Not turning away from your grief allows your heart to fill and to possibly crack open in a process that will put you in touch with a compassionate kindness and a fire in your belly that you didn't even know you possessed. You may discover a deeper sense of solidarity and empathy as you realize the bond that you share with others is the simple breath that keeps you alive. In this new awareness, this turning toward kindness that may save, it is this new awareness, this turning toward kindness that may save the world and each other. In her poem, For the Sake of Strangers, Dorian Lau speaks of this kindness and how it saved her. She writes, "No matter what the grief, its weight, we are obliged to carry it. We rise and gather momentum, the dull strength that pushes us through crowds." And then the young boy gives me directions so avidly. A woman holds the glass door open, waits patiently for my empty body to pass through. All day it continues, each kindness reaching toward another. A stranger singing to no one as I pass on the path, trees offering their blossoms, a retarded child who lifts his almond eyes and smiles. Somehow they always find me, seem even to be waiting, determined to keep me from myself, from the thing that calls to me as it must once have called to them, this temptation to step off the edge and fall weightless away from this world. So here we are, on the brink of a new year. And my hope for you in this new year is that you might look your grief head on, acknowledge, name, wrestle with it. And that in doing so, you find that life-giving energy and compassion that emerges from that process. that allows you to reach out to the stranger and for the stranger to reach out to you. My wish for you in this new year is that by doing this, you discover an abiding kindness and compassion for yourself, for the miracle of your own life. And that in this new year, you recognize yourself as an agent of kindness, as one who understands the amount of suffering in the world and understands that it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. My prayer for you is that by taking stock of your life, you might move boldly into the new year, full of clarity and commitment and compassion, yearning to truly live a life of integrity, service, and joy, yearning to bring forth something beautiful and healing into the world. May it be so, and happy, but not quite, almost, New Year. Amen. As we move into the new year, may life surprise and protect you and be no more harsh than your spirit can bear. Go in peace and be a blessing.